I'm Austin.
And I'm Scooter.
And you're listening to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Part of the Audio Drama Network. All right, so I have Casey Whalen with me. Say hello, Casey.
Hello, Scooter. It's so good to talk to you again. It's been it's been a while, but we have seemed to be so much more intertwined since then through all the audio drama like network stuff, and it's great because it seems like everyone's getting more active as the group expands.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I like a lot about the audio drama community. We had a great time. Me and Austin both went up to Steve Schneider's house. I like Steve too. I've never actually met Steve in person. Man, he's a character.
He is a character, and he's rough around the edges at times, but he won't pull his punches when it comes to his honesty about certain stuff. And that's why I admire him as a creator.
Well, for one, I wanted to talk to you about the way that you construct your studio at home, because I know a lot of people, when they're working on their recordings and wanting to kind of up their game for how they do it out of their home or even start doing it out of their home, there's not a whole lot of guides that people are aware of besides your book. I think your book covers a lot of this as well, right?
There's a couple chapters that cover sort of the guerrilla style of recording at your home. Yeah, so I have a couple sections in there that cover that.
So if you're not aware, what's the name of your book, please?
Bombs Always Beep, Creating Modern Audio Theater. Basically covers from end to end, from like creating an idea for audio theater all the way through producing it, casting it, editing it, post-production workflows, all that stuff. I wanted to do something that kind of encompasses the engineering side and also the creative side.
The ideal home studio setup, you'd say. Like, you don't have, you don't have a whole lot of space. You're talking about something that can be easily done.
So that would definitely be, and I think a lot of people know of this, the technique, the closet, the clothes that are hanging inside your closet are a really great absorber of sound. But the trick is that you have to put the microphone inside the closet and talk into the closet. That way you get the reflection and not the other way around. But that's the best way for like the low end. And if you can actually put like a blanket behind you as well to try and additionally reinforce that sound dampening quality.
So what other options would you say?
I guess if you want to have something that's like the next stage up from that, you could start doing something where you can do like drop panels. And what I mean by that is sound blankets are really a very good way of isolating a space. And you can actually hang these blankets if you just have thick blankets or something that's, has the thicker it is, the more sound absorption properties it'll have. So, and if you can hang these from the ceiling in some way, and create like a 4x like a wall that has four panels, you can like isolate a room inside your house that you can actually have multiple characters talk into. Also, you have to kind of cover above and below too. So it's actually, you kind of have to think of it like a cube, because the one thing that you are trying to prevent in all of this is reverberation time. You don't want any sort of like reverberation time additional to your environment, as at least as little as possible, because what that reverb is like echo, if people aren't familiar with that term, that sort of marries a voice within a space. Like if you have recording somebody that's in a bathroom, it sounds like they're in the bathroom. That reverb is the bathroom sort of effect. When you're dealing with a recording space, you don't want to marry it to something already there. You want it to be as clean as possible. By creating a space that has as little of like voice refraction and reflection as possible, you can sort of achieve that. And ceilings and floors, like if you're doing it on a wood floor, if it's got like, if it's polished or waxed, that'll have reflective properties. Ceilings that are just, just a flat ceiling will also have reflective properties. So sometimes you actually have to drape an additional blanket on the ceiling as well to cover, that reflective surface.
So what would you say is the best way to test that? You have your space set up, you're trying to set up sound blankets or some other kind of something to do the sound dampening. What's the best way of determining how effective that is?
The easiest thing is just to clap, because when you clap, if you hear the echo coming off of it, you'll hear the space right now. Like I'll do it. I'll take off my headsets for a second and do it on here. Yeah, I'm currently in my my outpost right now, which I kind of actually have this sort of setup that I'm describing now in this space, and it's pretty dead in here as well.
So let's talk about, I wanted to go over some of the pictures and images that you sent. I'm taking a look.
Sure, sure, yeah.
I'm taking a look at the layout that you have for the space with the studio, the lobby, and the booth.
Well, so let's talk about, because I actually have two spaces. Sure. that we can talk about. At my home office, I have what I call Outpost One. It's the drop-down blankets that I described, except the four walls that are blankets are actually rolled up into curtains here. And make it like a collapsible recording space. That means I can sort of like use it for normal space when I'm like doing other things and everyday stuff. But when I need to record and have a really, really quiet environment, I can drop all four walls. And there's actually like ceiling tiles above them of the RLX foam. So it's got like the foam ceiling on top. So it's kind of covered on all four bases. But the nice thing is, because it's all bolted in the ceiling, you don't have to deal with any like space issues. You can actually just roll them up by like, I put a PVC pipe at the bottom and just kind of rolled it around the PVC pipe and then tied it off on the top. So if your room is quiet as it is, and then you create a room within a room that has like a deadening like space of like 12 inches, it's going to be really quiet after that. So it's interesting how much like leverage and how much sound reduction you can get out of just really simply, you know, low cost, you know, room within a room properties.
So what's the easiest way to set up a room within a room?
To lag and basically bolt the blankets into the ceilings. They have, if you're looking to do like a medium cost setup, they do actually sell sound blankets that have grommets in the top that you can use like carabiner clips to attach them into bolts and bolt them into the ceilings. And then the trick of it is then you have to make sure you get like a 2-inch or 2.5-inch PVC pipe at the bottom and attach it to the bottom of the curtain so you have something to roll it onto at the top. And then I have some Velcro straps that I kind of tie it onto the top to make sure they stay up there when not in use. Yeah, there are sound blankets that are like only $50. So you can really realistically do it for only $200. So it all depends on like sort of the quality. And there's a lot of actually packing blankets. We'll have those little grommets at the ends too.
So how did you come upon the final design that you used? Is it just years of iterations of stuff or?
Kind of. My background is a little bit unique in that I was an Army engineer. I was a broadcast engineer in the Army for several years. And so I had a lot of different jobs there. And I worked actually with AFN at AFRTS, which did like radio booths and stuff. So I've always sort of had, you know, worked with soundproofing in some ways, whether it was like even with filmmaking and stuff, you're always trying to find ways to dissipate the noise. Environments will determine very easy properties or as many properties that you can try and remove as possible. It's something you just get from experience and doing this a couple times and finding out what works. And honestly, I mean, as we talk about the different space things that are going to come up that upgrades that I've done, I didn't know at first either which was the best way and sort of learned from these trial and errors. So
what are the biggest things that you were surprised to find as you were building the studio?
The first one that I did, the first studio that I actually built was this one here of Outpost One. And it actually started out as a garage. It's a hollowed out garage and it's sort of a rental and it was just wood and walls and just grossness, but it was just a hollow shell. And all of our junk was in here because, you know, you accumulate things over time. So because it was all the way down to the wood studs, it allowed me to pick the right insulation, because actually that is one of the keys that I'm going to mention. Building a studio will give you so many more advantages for soundproofing than just trying to modify a space. There's this soundproofing called Safe and Sound. Like it's a very specific type of insulation. It's super thick. It's very fibrous. It is not the same kind of cheap pink stuff you see in walls. This stuff is really, really meant to dissipate sound. And you can actually typically double it up in the spaces required to give it even more deadening. Honestly, the insulation is not hugely expensive. It's only like $35 for a bag that can cover maybe 100 square feet or something like that. Like it'll cover a whole wall in a bag. If you can build the space within a space and put the nice insulation in there, it's a big increase in the sound reduction properties. One of the problematic things with the garage door is, especially with the garage, is you deal with the garage door. You have to get an actual, like they sell insulation kits for garage doors, actually, which are great. They can, because they have to be able to bend with the garage, so you can still open and close it if you want to. Honestly, a garage door is such a big, like, entrance of sound. If you can block it off, do it.
Man, so I really kind of makes me wish I had a garage for that exact purpose, because that sounds really useful for that kind of space. How big is the space in general?
The little one I have here is like maybe the usable space is probably only maybe 100 square feet. So that's why that I actually needed to get a secondary space, is because it was just so small in here that I wasn't able to do any more than maybe one person, two people at the max, just because it would get really hot in here. Ventilation is not that great. The air conditioning unit is like in the wall and very loud, and you can't have it on. So it's,
hey, did you get a chance to take a look at any of the images that I sent you of what we're working with for a studio?
So looking at yours, so it looks like you actually got some sound traps in the ceiling that are sort of natural up there. It's like the first thing that kind of dropped my eye.
It's actually one of the first reasons that I ended up buying this townhouse, is specifically because I liked the look of that.
Do you get any reflection up there, like any like slapback or anything?
No, we haven't, and I'm still thinking about adding some more sound dampening to the first maybe two bars worth of ceiling.
So where did you get those panels on the wall? Just curious. Those are a little bit different than I've seen.
I forget what they call it, but it's basically sound dampening foam.
Yes, Foam Factory.
Yeah. So Foam Factory, I just got all this from Foam Factory. I think it was maybe $150.
Wholesale and bulk. It's not that expensive, and you can get a lot of that stuff to put on the walls. Like, so you have, looking at all four different walls here, you have a green screen studio. And so what can you do in your space? What was sort of like the design intention?
So we wanted to have a space that I could use as an entertainment center for playing video games or watching movies. Plus, with some minor transformations, we could use as the recording space. My place isn't dramatically large.
So looking at your space, do you find that like cable management and like mic management in spaces like this is really difficult to do?
Oh, you know what? We had a really big problem with that for a while. And then I started getting some of the wraps, cable wraps that have like a slit down the length of it, so you can put more cables into it. So basically, mm-hmm. by bundling like the monitor cables and the mic cables into one of these fatter cables, the cable management's mm-hmm. a lot better.
So this is the way that you normally set up things inside.
Correct.
There. Yeah,
for recording. Sense. And then like basically that night or the next day, I'll break it down so that I can use it as a normal entertainment center.
Might behoove some designers out there is to actually have the mic cables run to the ceiling and drop the mics from the ceiling.
I really wanted to do that. I was looking for stands that I could do as a at like a hang stand.
Yeah, so the actual like swinging microphones are actually hinged, and so they just like they pull them to the side when they're not in use, and then when they want them, they just swing back.
I cannot find one of the companies that sells those.
It probably wouldn't be too difficult to engineer one on your own, to be quite honest with you, and it probably wouldn't be too expensive, because one of the things that's really cool about microphone equipment is those threadings are so standard that you can get a whole bunch of like poles and stuff for pretty cheap on eBay, and you could probably make the thing out of a mic stand that you could buy for like $20.
Huh.
Yeah, no, I mean, all you have to do is just do something like some sort of pivot point that's like in the center of the room, that's like where it comes down, and then you the pole like can collapse a little bit, and so the microphone is on a pole that you can kind of swing down. And one of the things about that I really loved about the old radio days is the actors kept their chins up, because the microphone stands now tend to be down, so they tend to droop their chins down and crush their diaphragm.
Yeah, we have to kind of teach them to not do that, or just start adjusting the mic up higher. One of the things that we wanted to try was take advantage of the rails, like the exposed beams, to add like a slide rail that we could attach a mic to.
That'd be interesting if you had some sort of like camera rail system up there where you could like move the camera to where you needed to for different things too. Well, think about this. Like if you put those rack rails in those beams right there, the supports, you can also do additional sound blankets, because it looks like that green wall can be a big reflective surface. It's like sound blankets are great because they're collapsible. You can adjust them and be like, oh, let's put it over here because I want to record this sound effect, or oh, I want to record the sink. Let's put it around the sink so we can get this clean. What are you using to edit, and what are you using to capture the audio is the translation.
All right. So we're using a Tascam 1800. It's like an 8 microphone DAW.
So what is it going into? What's your editing system?
So we're primarily using Reaper. Price-wise, one of the more efficient ones, since I don't really have a license for any of the more expensive pieces.
Yeah, no, and Reaper is a really great way to do multi-track recording. How many channels are you able to do at once through the system?
8.
8. Okay, so that's a great, that for people who are wanting to do like audio drama stuff, like that's a good amount. That can be like a voice of God microphone if you want to have the voice of God recorded, and then like a whole bunch of different people talking. These systems are all XLR inputs, which is I think that's something that everyone needs to consider getting if they're going to do this in any capacity, I think.
Yeah, I really like that.
The other options, you know, if people want to do the non-recording directly into the computer, they can go into those little the Zoom recorders, and those work. They work great, and they can actually work as an interface into the computer as well, which can be helpful. You can go out and record stuff, and so those actually are really great ways of sort of an introductory interface for people who are like looking to start out. So that way they can get an XLR microphone and really.
Fortunately, I've had people that have shown me the way for that kind of stuff, because I would have probably started off with a Blue microphone otherwise.
Yeah, the Blue microphones, I mean, they are a great microphone for like some voiceover stuff if you're doing like simple things. And
so one of the things that I'm really happy with lately is we got a headphone amplifier.
Oh, like a multi, like a one in and like a four out.
This is a one in eight out.
Tell
it's
me.
A Behringer PowerPlay.
Yeah, PowerPlay Pro 8. Okay, so by Behringer. Yeah, this, if you have a engineer at the station who's trying to monitor something and wants to like dedicate a channel just for them, they can actually push it and get the dedicated channel and not, you know, that's kind of cool. The one for Outpost 1, and then I guess we can kind of jump over to the next one, I use an Inbox Pro 3 with Pro Tools here. It gives me like a really good four-channel input. They were fairly expensive back in the day, but they're actually only about like $200 used. Basically, you have two dedicated channels that are routable through headsets and things like that, and on top of like a multitude of outputs for surround sound and stuff like that. So you can actually do surround sound mixing with it, which is nice because it gives you enough outputs for that, which a lot of interfaces don't do that. So yeah, you want to move on to the Outpost 2, the project that's been ongoing for freaking forever.
Yeah, so how far along are you for that?
I have completed what I needed to get done for it to be recordable in there now. I'm just doing small improvements to try and make the space a little bit, you know, more open. The Outpost 2 was one of these projects where we sort of got a really great rental space that we had. It has like an office part, and it had like this other section that was right up against the side of the building, which was against the concrete wall. And it's like, oh, it's great. But the problem is part of it had a window that overlooked to the street. The street was just really active, just tons of motorcycles and trucks and all the stuff going down. So this one started out, yeah, so this is one of those places that was like, it's inside of a complex that was giving us low rent. And low rent is one of the biggest like draws for having a space, obviously, because it lowers your overhead for everything considerably. We sort of started at one level, and then we just sort of evolved from there. Like at first, we actually, with our office layout, we're like, oh, this office is enclosed, so let's put the recording stuff in there. And then we tried that, and then we realized that, oh, the window lets in so much noise that it's not even worth recording anything in there. So that's where we started with that one. And then we moved it onto the other side by the brick wall, and then we did the curtain system where it's like, oh, we put soundproofing on all the walls, but then we got this curtain that went across that way that you like have this wall that's retractable that you can use for sound dissipation. And that worked okay, but there's still like the sound going above the wall curtain, below the wall curtain. It's just, it's not ideal. And you can hear everybody who's walking around. If they like the person sneezes in the booth, you're going to hear them around the corner. Because we were also doing it because we couldn't afford very much in the beginning. And so it's that was the other half of it is, the nice thing about soundproofing is you can always like add on more and then repurpose what you have. So it's like, oh, we made improvements here. Now this foam can go on this side and on this panel. And we did this one better, so we can move this over here. And there's the professional glue to spray it on there. And yeah, it does leave some resin and residue that we're going to have to scrape off when we eventually move out. But it's not that bad. You're going to have to repaint the walls anyway for most of these places. So it's,
how do you feel about command strips? We started doing that instead.
Those are expensive in comparison. Really, you can get a lot out of a can of the glue. I mean, granted, you don't want to like do damage to, if you're in an apartment and something like that, and you're paying like, do those things, do the more expensive attached things. You don't have to damage the stuff behind it, because obviously you don't want to, you know, your security deposit will probably cost you more than the glue. But if you're in a place that you're going to be doing this for a while, use the glue. Cutting that stuff is not easy either. You do have to have special, good, strong scissors that can cut through it. Don't even attempt your ones from your kitchen. Just go out to Home Depot, get the ones that Milwaukee makes a great one that has a serrated edge along it. That's like will be really easy to cut foam because you don't want to.
And we ended up using an X-Acto knife, which was okay, but.
Oh, the exact. Yeah. And it shreds and like the edges can look pretty bad, but the actual scissors are pretty good because you can cut and trim. And like sometimes you have to cut them to go around lights and stuff like that. Like if anybody's out there thinking like, oh yeah, my space can start here and then keep on going from there. Like we really did. We just made the space a little bit better each time and it got a little bit more deadened, a little more deadened. And then after the curtain, we actually built a wall. So it ended up being like a really dark, dank recording space where like there's blankets hanging from the ceiling to drop down the reflection of the ceiling. And the wall that was created was actually one side is drywalled. And the other side that's on the interior of the booth is actually the studs are open and the actual soundproofing insulation is exposed inside. But then there's a sound cloth that goes over the whole wall. So it's actually like this sort of engineered sound wall that can help deaden and dampen the space and create basically like bass traps with the wood and the insulation itself. So all three elements get to work together. Like anything that's construction materials are actually going to be cheaper than some of the stuff that's specific for like sound dampening. Wood's not too expensive, but wood is actually a great sound deadener. So that's really nice. Is the wall itself like has pockets for the sound to go and die. Actually, the sound cloth in itself is probably one of the more expensive components of this construction, just because it is very, very thick. And it's a little overdoing it in some regard, but the amount that it helps in reduction and reflection and just the overall quality and actually strength of the walls to hold back the insulation is nice. And so the fabric that goes over all the insulation, because you don't want that insulation, though, that fiberglass to get out at all. So this fabric is really dense and not going to let it escape, which is nice. It's the Guilford of Maine Anchorage fabric. It's pretty expensive for each square yard. I will be very honest with you. It's like $20 a square yard sometimes.
What do you feel as far as the use of, because you were talking about you don't want to have, for example, any kind of flooring that's going to cause reflection, such as like a polished hardwood floor.
If you have a hardwood floor that you have to get rid of, you're going to have to get some rugs in there. You can actually, anything that's just going to be big and clothy, couches, sometimes it like realistically, if it's a space that a couch is just naturally in, you might as well just leave it there. The floors are problematic for sure, but ceilings are the ones that people tend to forget about is they are reflective and do come back down. If your space can allow it, you really do want to try and cover the top. You know, at all times, it's a six, you know, there are six surfaces around you that can cause more reflection.
So I imagine the wall facing you is probably the most important, or is it...
It's the one that they're talking into generally, because if you are if you're primarily recording the voices, if you have one wall that's reflective and one wall is not, you want to have them talking to the wall that's not, obviously. But then there will still be some residual reflection because voices go in all directions. So I can talk a little bit about. I mean, I don't want to bore people with the construction of and enhancements of the studios, but we actually do the next level of upgrades in what we call sort of phase two. That we just completed this last month that I could sort of go through. It was the way that sort of our studio went from like, I would say from a C grade recording space to like an A minus space, like not the best in the world, sure. But really good.
Let's talk about that.
The idea of this entire construction thing was I wanted to enhance our space in a way that we spent a little money, but I spent enough to where it's going to really make a difference. And I want to spend it in the right ways in a very economic way. And sort of since we rented the space, we didn't have any opportunities to modify it. So we had to figure out a way of like, okay, well, how are we going to do this where it's not going to change the structure of the building, but we're going to maximize our soundproofedness. So the idea in this plan was to take that initial room that we had that was small and double it, go all the way out and just go and create a very long recording space. It's like 10 feet wide but like 20 feet long. So it gives you a sort of a good enough space to give you some distance for some actors in there. You can hold like maybe five people at a time recording comfortably. You can probably cram more people in there, but really like five people is not going to be an issue. We sort of achieved it by creating that room within a room thing, a wood framed box. We did like the ceilings. We did all the walls all framed in and then did that insulation on each wall. Like each wall, including the ceilings, are covered in wood and soundproofing now. So we were able to like really encapsulate and isolate. And actually, we were able to even engineer a wall to where you could go through two doors to get in the studio instead of one. So that way you have even more barriers to keep the noise of like the studio people out. And actually we did a double window too, because originally, oddly enough, this little office that we had in the corner had its own glass window. And that was sort of like our booth window that we just used because it was just in the space. But then in our space within the space, we actually created another window and actually framed in an acrylic panel with sound dampeners around it. So it's actually a double window in that environment. So it was really like a custom build to make this work, but it allowed us to create a space that I can keep the air conditioning on. It was there are many multiple layers of sound barriers between us and the street now. Like we added in some additional soundboarding. There's actually really cheap like cork board and stuff like that that actually works as soundboards you can put in between to help deaden those spaces as well. And then all of that put together was like five layers between us and the street. And then now it's, you go in there and it's just,
so what kind of material are you using for the window?
The big panel itself is an acrylic square that we bought it from Home Depot, and we cut it down to the size that we needed. And it actually wasn't hard. So we just did a frame. It was like 1x2 wood panels and just framed it in there. And we actually wrapped the wood with the sound cloth that I had left over to make it so it seems like each one of these are like little wrapped cubes of wood. And so I was able to put the inner frame that pushed the acrylic against that. And then I put another frame. And so really the edges of the acrylic are wedged between two really nice cushioned pieces of wood on all sides so that the actual like window is very comfortably soundproof, and like I don't think that there's going to be anything like seeping through the edges, so to speak.
How did you find the space in the first place to rent?
This was one of the properties that just kind of came up through a connection on like Craigslist. Like it was just one of these things where I was like, oh, this is kind of this. So it was a little unit, and so it was not even the one that we're in now, and we rented out that one for a while. And then this one ended up coming available later, and because we were renting there, we saw it and it was like, oh, this is a really unique space. Let's try and get this one. And then we ended up just switching from the art room to over to this one. I'm trying to figure out a way to get this AC duct system to work really well. Like I'm having the duct go into a box that's basically wood that's going to reflect it through wood blinds and directors instead of metal ones, so that it actually has not as reflective properties. And then also wrap a lot of this wood with the sound cloth that I use, because it's so finely stitched that it actually won't, it'll reflect air pretty well. And so I've lined some of the metal vents with the cloth itself with some glue.
What kind of door to work with?
Sure. Oh, solid core all the way. Like that's and if you're building a room, that's easy, because you can get a pre-frame door at Home Depot fairly simply, and then you can just screw it in there. You got to get some shims to make sure that the door will close properly. If you get a solid core door, meaning that it actually has like filled with like cork or like cardboard material or whatever they do to make it dead, but it's basically just a door to give you extra reinforcement, and then you can just slap on some foam.
Doors that are built to be soundproofed. Like they're basically built in, and that's,
yeah,
the price differential is ridiculous. It was like 20 times.
They're great, but they're meant for like one side of the wall is super loud. The other side of the wall is like, you need it absolutely quiet. So those are what those are for. Like there are the studio at Chapman that they work in, that they have those there that will take off your hand. They're very thick metal, solid doors. And they're like 10 feet tall. They're crazy. I mean, there's no reason you need it. I mean, you're not going to be having like an industrial area on one side. But if you're working in a studio like Warner Brothers or something like that, or on a lot that has a lot of crap going on all over the place, and you have to isolate that's where they spend the money on that kind of stuff. Cover technology for making a recording space as efficient as possible.
Yeah, what do you have? What are you thinking?
So, one of the things that I did actually with this upgrade that is a dream is when you're working in a studio, you don't want to have to deal with a lot of cables coming from your booth to your recording booth. So it's nice to get like an umbilical cord that's like got, you know, one end has like, you know, 8 XLRs and, you know, 8 quarter inch plugs. And the other end has a box that has all the jacks so you can plug in inside the recording booth. That way you have the option of, attaching the mics there and you don't have excess cables everywhere. You know, it's one cable to a box and then you rig it from there depending on your setup.
So trying to clean up the space so that it's not just a giant mess of cables, basically.
It's very clear and easy to see, oh, here's channel one into the system, here's two, here's three, directly from the box in the room, rather than, oh, what cable is this coming from the wall? What's the label on it? I mean, oh, the label fell off, and you have to label the cables, and no, the number's right on the box, and you can even label the box additionally if you want to. But I will say there is one thing, if you're doing Foley in this environment, that really is helpful, and that is to have an extension terminal inside your recording space. And all that is basically like we have a recording computer on one side of the wall in our booth, but then we have a monitor inside the booth with a mouse and keyboard so that you can actually control your recording system. And in our case, it's Pro Tools from inside the room at the same time. So you can actually do simultaneous Foley there inside the room.
Okay.
And it allows you to do single man Foley sessions rather than having to do two people. Also, it allows you as a performer to see visually on your timeline when other people are speaking so you can actually time your actions if you're trying to fold.
So do you actually have like a display monitor that the actors can see from the recording booth?
Yeah, it's a little one. It's not very big. It's like a 30-inch monitor or 30-inch TV inside the room that mirrors the secondary monitor inside there. So it's not huge.
Part of having your home studio is being able to have the separate isolated space to be able to do recordings for a variety of things, not just voices. But it looks like you have this cool little box that has different materials specifically to make it easier in your studio space to generate things like footsteps.
Footsteps are one of these things that can really ground your voices in reality because it connects the voice to the world in a physical way with footsteps. So I always encourage people to do footsteps for audio entertainment stuff because it's really essential in some ways for, you know, understanding what's going on. And so having a space where it's easily accessible to, you know, walk in various surfaces is very, very crucial. And so in our space, what we have is sort of a box that you open it up and it has four different dividers and each one is a different walking surface that you can go into. And this allowed us to, you know, have it in the room and we can actually move it around a little bit. It's heavy as hell, but it is something that's there that we can actually close and put wood on top of, and then have another surface to interact with, which is the actual walking surfaces on top of the box. So we have some linoleum paneling up there as well. So there's the box itself has multiple surfaces inside.
Yeah, I like the layout and the design of that. That sounds like something that I really want to try now.
I think there's an even a better design if we were to just do the boxes smaller and make them stackable, or they're in an actual like one of those toolboxes sort of things. We can sort of pull out the material and put it on the ground, so to speak. And I mean, there's always the option of just buying pavers, which are the small units of like paths and stones from like Home Depot. And those can also make great solid walking surfaces. So you don't actually have to like pour concrete. You can just put a stone down and walk on that. And then you can even move them around if you need to and use them for other things. So
I think that would be a great addition to my studio as well as other people's studios. That's like, I was looking at a footstep program at one point. It's one of those ones that dynamically generates footsteps depending on like you basically set up the situation and it generates what the footsteps would sound like.
No, I've seen those and I've seen people do them on the keyboards as well. And I can always tell there's a performance in a footstep. There's a weight, a slide, a trip, a hesitation. And these libraries don't have any of that. It's just the most generic thing. There, it's the same as you can do a variable pace. And a pace of a footstep is only like maybe 10% of it, really. There's so much more like depth and volume. And a performer will bring in that quality to it. They actually did an experiment on this where they tested people against sound effects footsteps and real Foleyed footsteps, like just canned stuff versus not, to match it. And they did it against film, granted, but they wanted to see if people's preference of what they preferred for footsteps was stuff from, you know, canned sound effects or generated ones versus ones that are Foleyed. And every single time, all the Foley stuff came out ahead. For some of the fake sound effects, like they were like, oh, well, if you use, like, say, for instance, the walking of horses versus coconuts and things like that, like they tested other things. And so that was some of the results. But the footsteps ones unanimously were all the real effects of the actual footsteps of people walking, like upstairs, downstairs, all the weight of doing stairs. Yeah, upstairs, downstairs, by the way, Foley, you kind of need a big unit to do properly. It's hard.
Is that easier, you think, to do in a field recording? Like just bring your kid around us at an actual house?
It's one of these things where actually we built one that was like a wood like mini step that was in the studio to use. And that worked pretty well, actually. It gave us like 6 steps to go up and down because the weight of somebody walking up a step when you're like trying to get it perfect and really feeling and get that creak right, and these rickety stairs that they created were like perfect for that. So that's one of these things where it's like I've used the real steps before and I've had to recreate them on not steps, and it's like the steps just, oh, this sounds so beautiful because it's a weight that you can't like quantify.
Some small artifact of that gets lost.
Exactly. And it's something that you have to listen for and really train your ear. And it just takes a lot of, you know, just listening to hear that quality.
Well, Casey, thank you for coming out and talking to us today.
No, thank you for having me. I love to, Matt, we just got this space kind of finished and I'm excited to get other projects started in it. And in a lot of ways, actually, it's kind of the start where we're going to do some is your program familiar with the 11th hour?
I've heard somewhat about it, but if you want to tell us a little bit more, that's fine.
Sure. Well, I'm not a representative of them, but I'm participating in it this iteration. But it's basically a collaboration of various audio drama artists working together cohesively on projects that normally wouldn't work together. So I'm working together with 4 different artists. And we're going to record at our studio, and it's going to be pretty fun to do a collaboration project there. And so if anybody's interested in joining the creative process and getting involved, take a look for the 11th hour. I think they've posted inside the Facebook group and other places. So
yeah, I need to check that out. I was talking to Fred about that. He pretty much convinced me that it's something I should try.
This is my first year trying it, so I'm going to see how it goes. It's going to be a lot of fun, and if it's not the best thing in the world, oh well. We're just out there having a good time, and it's a bunch of creatives trying something new. And
can't argue that. So, what are you working on recently? Let's give a bump out there for whatever you're currently working on.
Sure. So I'm still, in terms of the audio drama world, what I'm working on is I'm still working on Gold Rush. It has consumed my life and most of my waking moments. It's a lot to get done, and it's a very complex project, but ultimately, it's going to be pretty amazing when it comes out. It's just one of these projects that just, it's got a lot of moving parts, and there's so many components in terms of voices already. And also some of the partnerships and business deals behind how this project gets made, because we actually work with some pretty decent big budgets for stuff like this. But it's going great. And it's kind of a dream to be able to do this in this way.
We will all be very excited when that comes out and we can consume it.
I'm jazzed because it's sounding amazing so far. I can't wait for it to come out.
Well, Casey, thanks for talking to us, and we'll catch you some other time.
Appreciate it, Scooter. Thank you much.
This episode was brought to you with the support of our patrons through Patreon.
For more information about how to become a patron, go to patreon.com/ADPP.
Where you can get some interesting perks as thanks for your support.
Don't forget to check us out at audiodramaproduction.com.
Thanks to our line producer and editor, Tanya Milojevic.
And our executive producer, Matthew Boudreau.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.